All the Rage with John Bowd on www.traxfm.org.
Welcome to the second show of John Bowd's All the Rage here on www.traxfm.org. Last week we were talking about, the press and expressing an opinion, and this week we're talking about working class and all sorts of specifics in that. But don't let listen to me, listen to him. John, take it away.
Thank you very much, Dave. Firstly, in reference to episode one, I'd like to make a quick reference that I forgot to include at that time, and I'll explain why when I make this in a minute. I was talking in the first episode, the state of debate, as I called it then, about Milo Yabadabadopoulos, whatever the twat's name is, and I referred to his fans as, quote, unfuckable freaks. Now, I don't wish to silence or fail to acknowledge anyone's voice, particularly women, so I need to point something out that I love that quote, but it's not actually mine. It comes from a lady named Amber A. Lee Frost, who, among other things, is a host on the podcast Chapo Trap House, and who also coined the term that's quite popular in America at the moment to describe people like the Chapos, the dirtbag left. Now, I specifically want to make this reference because she is continually not credited for coming up with that. They often be, oh, who came up with that term? She did. So if you're listening, Amber, apologies that I forgot to say that in the first show. And I'm sure you are listening because, you know, you have exquisite taste. So, yeah, hopefully you are. Now, moving on from there. Yes, as Dave said in the intro, this week's episode is about the British working class, where we are and where we need to be. And what follows, of course, is all of my own opinion with a little bit of info to back it up, I hope. So I want to talk about what I consider to be a huge issue that opening up now, I understand, will probably take more than one show and certainly involves loads of intersectional issues. The main focus for me is why I think the working class in Britain is under threat of loss and irrelevance, along with expressing my hatred of so much of the culture that we have let ourselves sink into. This is an issue of irrelevance, self-hatred, vicious reactionary attitudes, and intolerance to anything different. However, at the end of all that, I also want to discuss how I think this can be changed and where we are seeing advancement at the moment. Now, much of this discussion will focus on the white working class for reasons that will become more obvious as we go. I'm not attempting to shut out other ethnic groups or LGBT voices specifically. All of those do have a role to play here, and that is actually kind of part of my point of tonight's talk about how much of a role all people within the working class have to play regardless of where they come from or what their backgrounds are, etc. However, I need to take to task my lot, who are the white working class. And this is coming from somebody who is heteronormative, so this is that perspective I'm coming from. I want to underline that this is not some kind of insider's confession of all the terrible things that we do. Actually, far, far from it. This is a cry of pain, but it also seeks to have some nice balm rubbed on it in order to make it all feel better. That's a terrible, terrible metaphor, but I was on my thinking on my toes. So, now, to begin with, one of the biggest problems that I perceive in British culture, or even more specifically than that, English culture, is the insistence of categorising ethnic minorities along race lines and never doing this for the ethnic majority. This doesn't mean I want to see another category. In fact, we could do with less, really. But I just feel that fact needs to be recognised for all of its drawbacks, because it causes us to treat other people in ways that I think border on the dehumanising on occasions. That's something else that will come up in future shows. There's been other things I want to talk about. But we do need to address white privilege. So, to address the first part of this week's show title, I think the working class in Britain, and especially the white working class, are doing quite terribly. We are at the arse end of 30 years of degradation with nothing but resentment for the position we have helped to put ourselves in. Within a group already marginalised, we have managed to divide ourselves further. And most of this was done by choice, and we need to take a big share of the blame. Obviously, not all of it. Now, the first part we deal with here is deindustrialisation. This was, without a doubt, the main key over the last 30 years. This was an activity that was done with practical methodical attention to process, and a complete lack of empathy. The people whose lives would be affected were never thought about. The new world was one of a revenue-creating non-jobs, not things I consider to be real jobs. Now, although they are not exactly real, they cause a tremendous amount of damage when they fail. See 2008 for a good example. This is always things that are done to people who didn't really have anything to do with what caused the disaster in the first place. It was done in line with a very class-conscious program of attack on institutions and culture of the working class. In order to make this possible, we had a war against trade unions. We had the division of unemployment. As unemployment and homelessness grew, we saw a division of the worthy and unworthy working class, and positive media representations of our lot disappeared. From the beginning, neoliberalism's designers, people like Friedrich Hayek especially, wanted to dismantle the stable growth and low unemployment of the Keynesian political model. The writer Paul Mason has written about how in this period of mass unemployment was not a byproduct of Thatcherism, but the explicit intention. It was a plan to destroy the basic infrastructure of working class culture in Britain. That's basic infrastructure of working class culture in Britain is his direct quote, by the way. Should have said that. Worst of all for me, it seems that it worked. Chiefly because rather than being helpless victims in this shift, many of the British working class played a role in building neoliberalism. Many embraced the selfish form of individualism, espoused in the 1980s, and they voted Conservative, while the Labour Party responded by accepting the Tina thinking of the time, there is no alternative, and moved away from their base, isolating us. However, why wouldn't they? We did not bother you uniting enough and holding them to account. We embraced the idea of buying our way into a better life, and when it failed for the majority, we embraced the powerless victim status and expanded the worst parts of our closed-minded culture. I believe the worst ailment facing the British working class right now is the erosion of critical thinking. Instead of well-thought and fact-based arguments concerning our suffering and downfall, everything is the immigrants' fault, or the left, or occasionally the gays and the women. We turn on our friends and our neighbours and give those above us a free pass time and time again. The very media that hates us so much, like the tabloid press that keeps attacking us all the time and which we're seeing similar terrible attacks going on at the moment against our side, they are rewarded because we keep buying their shit, frankly. The desperate, pathetic need to have somebody to look down upon drives our own self-destruction, and our enemies thrive on this. At this point, I've put in the term music break. What do you think?
You're listening to John Bowd's All the Rage. Very, really interesting insight into that. When we come back, we're going to continue on the subject of working class and the possibility of the erosion of it.
John Bowd's All the Rage. On Tracks FM.
Thank you.
sounded Madonna and Erotica. It was quite a controversial song for its time, a little bit like this show, John Bowes All The Rage. We're talking of working class, specifically white working class, and what it's interesting, what we think it is and what it actually is what I think we're trying to get across. But I'll leave it to the expert. Take it away, John.
Thank you. We play a part in that terrible factor of British cultural life that is being obsessed with the past. So much of the culture of England specifically is, I believe, crippled by the past. Victory against the odds in a war that we have since rewritten as being solely down to Britain was led by one of the worst human beings ever, in my opinion, Winston Churchill. However, in modern history, he's seen as a hero, the greatest Briton even, while all his terrible actions, particularly against the working class, are forgotten. This has contributed to the slow erosion of working class culture, and we have directly played a part in perpetrating the same myths of our own irrelevance. I think I will probably come back to some more detail about that, listeners, if you're interested in our edition on nationalism. Now, this kind of thing is at its worst when racist and far-right scum latch on to the war narrative as if it has something directly to do with them. Further, they give uncritical defence of the soldiers and buy into the hero myth while hiding behind fake concern for their welfare, along with their fake concern for young girls in the North, which is another issue. And they use this to prove their patriotic dedication to this country, as if that makes you automatically a good person despite everything else. They do this while also trying to exclude all of the people they don't like. Time and time again, they don't really change. Those arguments are, that's one of the things that annoys me most about them. They haven't changed for at least 30 years of my lifetime, and having a quick flick through history, they haven't changed for even longer than that. So it's basically just the usual racist bollocks that's wrapped in a George Cross and a pint and is pretending you know something about history. These are the same people who tell us that Muslims can't be part of our culture, even though we have no agreed shared culture, and the people making this statement have added fuck all to public life. We hear from people like this that say they want to be listened to. Again, it's something we covered in our first show. Well, my return point to them would be, why should I listen to you? The type of person trying to recapture their wasted youth and full of resentment at their failure, all of which must be thrown at other people, people who are constantly attacked as outsiders and even lower on the scale than they are, often have less rights, and we're supposed to believe that if they just pissed off, everything would become magically better. Today, the dominant narrative of working class English people is of an ill-educated, violent, drunk gaggle of failure and ignorance. While this is a disgusting caricature at best, we must face the role we have played in creating it. Despite getting constantly fucked over by the powers that be in this country, we imagine some inalienable birthright that we have to the land and all the best jobs, with or without qualification, and inclusion within a society that is built on exclusion. This contributes to white working class boys not achieving educationally. It's not down to feminism or ethnic minority rights. It's down to not having a high enough view of education, in my opinion, and acting as if everything is just going to come to you. That's a very, very negative attitude, and it's just not going to work anyway, so it's stupid. I've heard people talk about, a problem for the white working class is that we don't have a story. Well, the problem is that I believe it's a story I've just outlined, and we can do a lot better than that. To address the balance, we need to stop living in the past and create a better future for everybody, for all of us, because the future is multicultural no matter what. It doesn't matter how anybody feels about it, it is. If you want some examples of real working class achievements to build upon, and there are many, but I'll list you some of my favourites. There was Cable Street in 1936. There was Spain also in 1936, our participation as part of the International Brigades, the trade union movement all over, the welfare state and the NHS in particular, which is due for a serious saving, in my opinion. All these things were done and built by predominantly working class actions, and a multicultural and multinational one at that. It was absolutely internationalist in so many ways. But these days, we've been forgotten in this. It's all been glazed over by what I would consider a very conservative, in both small and big C, centrism. That in politics and culture buffs up the rougher edges for mainstream consumption, an increasingly sanitised and irrelevant mainstream that is determined to dominate. Again, I think I need to probably do a whole show about how I think culture works and how I think that it kind of so often it's, you see the there's so many examples of things where, you know, you kind of have a young or exciting culture that takes part in, for want of a better way of putting it, parts of town that not so many people want to go to. But then, you know, you kind of take certain elements of it, filter it, clean it up, and put it in the mainstream. That goes through everything from before punk, but up to the rave movement, certainly in grime, things like that. You know, it's like, oh yeah, we can if we clean this up a bit, we can stick it on mainstream TV. Well, no, I'd leave it as it is. I just want to say a little side issue here about Antifa for a moment. Anti-fascism has a very powerful history in Britain that goes back before World War II. It was mostly a street movement, and by the nature of fighting fascism, which is a political doctrine that has violence at its centre, things could get a little bit leery. However, the dedication of a predominantly working-class people who saw this as terrible, destructive ideology and fought it as hard as possible, they even travelled out to Spain, is a point of tremendous pride, I believe. Today, the anti-fascist movement is constantly attacked in media representations, and we are actually told with a straight face that there is no difference between fascists and Antifa. Yes, folks, that's correct. Those who wish to defend communities and individuals against targeted violence and intolerance are in fact the same as people who believe society should be an authoritarian monoculture and they want to put people in gas chambers. Apparently we're all the same. I won't go into too much detail here, but I've had some actual examples of anti-fascist actions I've been to that have been wonderful, really joyous, peaceful moments. And then when I've gone home and watched the news, I've literally wondered where they're bringing the news from, because it wasn't from the same place I was at. Very, very strange thing. Well, it's not strange, it's very well designed, but there you are. Our responsibility lies in recognising and then combating all of this and the working class's participation in our own near destruction. We need to get rid of that, from voting Tory to buying into the convenient scapegoats of society. The important thing is to always properly remember the past and celebrate the best points, but you cannot live in it. Certainly, since the Brexit vote, we have heard lots about the white working class and their position either being damaged by the EU, and therefore that was a reason for the vote to leave, or those people being most responsible for the vote to leave. There's a lot of things I have a problem with here. Firstly, that much of this is said in publications and whatnot and on TV by very sneering middle-class commentators who want to start trouble just for the retweets, really. They just want to express their slightly suppressed racism all over again. But more importantly than that, there are studies, particularly a good one here comes from an organisation called CLASS, better known as the Centre for Labour and Social Studies. And they produced a report, which will definitely be discussed more in our Brexit episode, that found the following. 59% of the middle class voted for Brexit, and the working class came in at around 24%. So when we're told that Brexit was a response to some kind of working class fight back or some kind of uprising, I think we can pretty much put that one to bed. There are other reports too, and I'm sure listeners can do their own research or even send us some stuff. I'd be very interested to hear it. Anyway, in the context of Brexit, I actually believe that most of the kind of blaming it on the working class is really about having someone to blame when it all goes to the wall. However, this is a very powerful narrative, and I don't think we can ignore it just because it isn't true. Some people said the working class have spoken, and my argument this evening is that we haven't spoken for years because we've forgotten how to. These are the things that we do need to address, and in some cases, we need to pay for. What do you think? Music break? Or too early?
Sorry, John. I'm going to, just before we go to the music break, I'm going to put just a point of view of many.
Yeah, jump in, mate. Please.
What about the people? I was born in this country, so what about the point of view was, look, we're British. What we say is important. We're not having it. We're at the top of the tree, and what we say goes. That's not our way. We want keep our sovereignty. We want what we say. We're the power in the world. Sometimes it borders on sectarianism, personally.
Yeah, I think it borders on a desire for Empire 2.0 as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that point of view. And certainly the over 45s, I can understand that point of view. But I just look at the cosmopolitan makeup of our society now. And I don't know if it fits, but I might be wrong, John. What do you reckon?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very good question. And it was one I was want to go into more detail in the Brexit episode, but let's talk about a little bit of it now. As far as our sovereignty is concerned, I'm always really interested to ask anyone who brings that up to me is, can you give me a list of the situations whereby everyday life, where membership of the EU made your life worse, or where their rules and regulations made things worse for us? Because, and let's not, be too, my view on the EU is it's not something you can ever really have any great emotional attachment to, and I think that was part of the problem for the Remain campaign, because really it's just a trade base. At the moment, it's a fairly neoliberal one. I'm not mad keen on it, and I'll never forgive them for the way they treated Greece. But I also think that listening to very smart people from Greece, like Yanis Varoufakis, who says, actually, it's much better if we stay within it and try and reform it. Now, one of the things that struck me in researching some of the things we've done here, but also some of my other work, is how many rights and benefits that working people have within the EU. The fact that a good few of them haven't been properly enforced in this country is, again, down to our national governments. And I still feel that so many of the problems that people brought up for me about working life and people being underpaid and things like that, they're not down to the EU. They're down to the British government. They're down to the Conservatives, as they are now, the coalition in the last one. And I kind of think that the sovereignty debate is, I just find it a bit flat. I've never really been given a good example of it. I think it's more about perception. I think there's a perception of independence rather than a factual one. And I resent that because this thing, this Brexit thing, is going to have real effects on people's lives. And that wasn't thought about. I mean, again, my general concept of Brexit is that it was just a really vicious cocktail, as I was going to go on to say today, actually. A really toxic cocktail of viciousness and ignorance. And whenever I heard people speaking in favour of it, there was very little that didn't come out as some form of petty hatred and self-pity and factless rhetoric and fantasy. And I just could not buy into it. You know, I have no great love of the EU. No one really does, because it's not lovable. It's just an entity, you know. But for the same reason, I don't love land either. You know, the land I come from is irrelevant. I'm more interested in the people around me. Does that answer it in some way, do you think? Or
indeed, John. Indeed. And when we come back, John will be continuing on this fascinating subject of the working class, and certainly the white working class. Catch you after this.
John Bouts, all the rage, all the on Tracks FM, Tracks FM, Tracks FM, Tracks FM.
Did Jezebel and who you gonna tell when the repercussions been showing off your ass cause you thinking it's a trend, girlfriend? Let me break it down for you again. You know I only say it cause I'm truly genuine. Don't be a hard rock when you really are a gem, baby girl. Respect is just the minimum. defending them now. Lauren is only human. Don't think I haven't been through the same predicament. Let it sit inside your head like a million women in Philly pen. It's silly when girls sell their souls because it's sin. Look at where you be in. Hair weaves like Europeans. Fake nails done by Koreans. Come again. Yo. Win, win, come again. Win, win, come again. To the man, more concerned with his rims and his Timbs and his women. Him and his men come in the club like hooligans. Don't care who they defend, popping yang.
Like you got yang.
Let's not pretend. The one to pack pissed out by the waist, man. Crissed out by the casement. Still the name of this basement. The pretty face man claiming that they did a bid, man. Need to take care of their 3 and 4 kids. Been the face in court case when the child support late. Money taking, heartbreaking. Now you wonder why women hate me. The sneaky silent man, the punk domestic violence man, the quick to shoot the semen. Stop acting like boys and be men. How you gon' win when you ain't right within? How you gon' win when you ain't right within? How you gon' win when you ain't right within? Come again. Yo, yo, come again. The red drink, come again.
Do what that thing. We're talking to John Bowds, All the Rage, here on www.tracksfm.org, and we're kind of looking at things. I mean, John discusses so much, and John attends many humanitarian marches, all sorts of things. And then when he comes, and he's right, you know, and he tells me he's attending this march, I see nothing on the media, or if it is, it's a picture of. I think the latest media word is snowflakes. That's just ridiculous. But what John's going to be attempting to do here on Tracks FM is just putting a different slant out there, putting a different opinion out there from what we're all used to, from what the media tell us to do. And certainly the ethnic minorities, when we came over in the 50s, 60s, and certainly 70s, because of British colonisation, we became very subservient. So whatever the government says, we just go along with. And you know what? Sometimes we should say, well, I don't believe that. Take it away, John.
Yeah, well, just coming back to a couple of points you said there, that subserviency is something that's always bothered me greatly. And one thing I would say about it is, what actual good did it do you? I'd ask that question to some people, you know, which you still came into a culture that was here. Hideously racist, and in many cases, as I'm trying to address here, remain so to this day. So, you know, these people that were horrible and judgmental towards you, you didn't do yourself any favours by being friendly to them. Also, just a point of reference, we are referencing our times, we were recording this on the day after this year's UN Anti-Racism Day. And among other places, there was a big rally in London yesterday, nice march. To the best of my knowledge, totally peaceful. I don't think the usual contingent of Britain First normally show up there. There's about 7 of them in their lovely home base-like uniforms. And they stand at the fountain by Eros in Piccadilly, that incredibly well-known British character, Eros. But, you know, normally there's a little bit of a verbal to and fro, which is fairly good-natured. If by good natured you mean each of us wanting the other to die. But I don't believe they were even there. And news coverage, well, again, I've not been on telly all day long, but unless I've missed something, Didn't see any news coverage of it whatsoever. So anyway, back to my main point here, and it is that I believe we're going to have to face up to understanding that some of the people who hate the modern world and everybody within it that they perceive to be doing better than them are never really going to change. They're defeated and they cannot and will not get over it. We must also accept we're living in probably quite a different society, in a different world, many of us. There are bridges that can definitely be built to kind of work between us, but in some cases, people are just not, they're just not going to take up that. They're not going to walk across those bridges. And for some people, particularly those who got more of an expression since Brexit, the rise of racist attacks, the rise of outright intolerance, these people are sometimes referred to as being left behind. Well, I think they're left behind for a good reason. They should be. Social change has to upset some people, because every form of social organisation has always had people in it who are perfectly happy with the way things are. This stretches across class and other boundaries, but especially concerns the rich. They've always done things to protect their position, including supporting their right, no matter how far right it goes, and attacking, sabotaging or preventing any slight move to the left. This is true of the world over, not just Britain. Further down the scale are people who are better off than others, too scared to change in case it threatens any of that better offedness, if you'll pardon the terrible use of language there, and often also feel better about themselves, frankly, because they have somebody to look down upon. We have a role, we have to roll past these people, frankly, and put them at the side of the road. You can't take those kind of attitudes with you. We should give people every opportunity to change, for sure, but otherwise, don't get held back by this. There's too much riding on our need to go forward and to build our own control of our own lives and our power base to ever be particularly bothered by the feelings of a racist granddad. Fuck the lot of them, frankly. Now, another example that always bothers me, I want to talk very quickly about the building trade. Now, I should point out, I do occasionally do a slightly comedic piece about why I hate builders. It's not true. I don't hate it. I kind of exaggerate it for a bit of a laugh. But there is something that I've noticed a lot of people I know within the building trade that really does bother me. And there is a general perception that the building trade has gone downhill, of which there is certainly some evidence of. And naturally, the fault for all this has to be Eastern Europeans, who are on lesser wages, and it's absolutely nothing to do with anyone ever doing a crap job or thinking that you didn't need to change in any way. Very, very conservative industry. Now, I'd like to point the listeners towards something quickly. There's a very, very good book which you can get over here in Britain. I'm assuming you can get around the continent or wherever else we have listeners from. It's called Blacklisted, and it's by Dave Smith and Phil Chamberlain, and it's all about the war that took place between building firms and big business and their fight against trade unions and any workers who brought up issues such as health and safety, poor wages, etc. These bosses and their collaborators, all of whom the book seems to indicate were born and bred, you know, red-blooded, cool, blimey Englishmen, these were the people who battered the building industry. They took away people's rights and they denied employment to anyone who had a certain political view or had upset them. They worked with an organisation called a consulting agency, which is a specific left-hating group of employers who kept files and files on people who ever so much as expressed a view that they didn't like. And this resulted in having a database that could be checked by any building industry, any building company, and it was, to find people who were denied employment. However, when anyone was asked about whether this blacklist existed, they completely denied it for years and years until finally they had enough information to raid the place and raided the offices of a bloke named Ian Kerr, who ran the consulting agency. Anyway, in the time that this happened, of course, building sites got more dangerous. There was an increase in deaths on the job. Employees got more precarious, and some of the people who had been blacklisted stayed out of work for their whole lives. And many of those lives were prematurely brought to an end by the terrible experiences. So in other words, you were fucked over by the boss and not the bloke next to you, as ever. So, you know, stop blaming the Eastern Europeans. You sound stupid. You know you're wrong. I also want to talk about my refusal to consent to any racism and xenophobia of any type, but I'm going to leave that for the issue, the episode on nationalism. But yeah, we do need to talk about privileges. Okay. Focusing on the white working class involves the shutting out other people. And I think this is actually one of the things that adds to our position of weakness. I think we need to stop doing that. because we really are, to coin a phrase that was given such a terrible, terrible battering many years ago by a certain prime minister, we are actually all in this together. We really are. That's a good phrase. We should try and rehabilitate it. I was going to give you a quick quote, actually. There's a fellow named Dr. Omar Khan of the Runnymede Trust, and he pointed out that ethnic minorities are not only part of the working class, but they're closer to us as allies and in experience than those who many of us have sided with recently. These ignored minorities, I think you will find, however, still have worse social deprivation, lower wages, less opportunities and representation in public life than we white people do. On an everyday life basis, white people experience life very differently for a number of reasons, including not having to be afraid of the police all the time, having less assumptions made about them and their character, plus not feeling like they do not belong to the same degree that others do. We need to take our share of responsibility for the drop in working class kids succeeding or going on to further education. For starters, you need to accept that education has been intentionally priced out of reach for working class people all over the place. My opinion is so that we don't repeat any of the gains that we won before, back in the day when we used to move on to areas which we're now staggeringly shut out of, such as media, and even higher management in certain areas and things like that. And again, I believe that uniting against these kind of things, this overpricing of education, is unity is the only thing that's going to help us here. There's no point in hating one group. We're all under attack. And to me, it's greatly heartening to see students recently were supporting their teachers, their UCL tutors, who are out on strike to try and protect their pensions. And are staging occupations in their universities and colleges, which are occupations that also have been going on for a couple of years now in order to get rid of the cuts to education. Anyway, for a long time, our culture, white culture, has not given enough emphasis to education and how much it can open our lives to better things. We have settled for sitting back and not bothering with anything and thinking that we deserve it all, with our embracing of mediocrity. We have got lazy and careless, and that is our fault, not anyone else's. We need to stop it. My advice to young working class boys, especially at the moment, would be to ditch all of the bullshit of toxic masculinity, spend some time reading in the library while we've still got them, and a little bit less time in the gym, and drop that chip on your shoulder. We're not entitled to anything more than everybody else, and when we secure better entitlements, it will be for the benefit of everybody. That's the only way it will work, and it's the only way it should work, really, because we all deserve a better life. One way or another, I would say every representation of working class people listed here, not least the clusterfuck of Brexit, is just designed to make us look bad and put the blame on us. Now, this mainstream culture, ladies and gentlemen, is not our friend. It doesn't like us. It likes to caricature us. As Owen Jones has pointed out on occasion, when was the last time you saw a positive trade union character in anything? Now, I think we need to move on to some positives, because I've given you enough of a whipping. Should we have a music break before we do?
Thank you very much, John. John Bowers, All the Rage. It's it's happening. When we come back, we're going to continue with this. I think he's covered off everything, but he's got more to say.
John Bowers, John the Rage, on Tracks FM.
But I don't do too well with apologies. I hope I don't run out of time, cause someone call a referee. Cause I just need one more shot, have forgiveness. I know you know that I made those mistakes maybe once or twice. About once or twice, I mean maybe a couple of hundred times. So let me redeem or redeem on myself tonight. Cause I just need I know more than I let you.
more than just your body.
Justin Bieber's sorry, me and John, we were rattling on here and we're rattling off here, and I was saying to John that there's so much we got to put right, and we've reached a point in society now where we're questioning things and able to put things across due to technology, and we've got so much to say. And it's really good. I think it really is healthy. I think it's healthy to say I'm voting Trump or not, but we have that debate. If you don't have that debate, people go and vote in booths and vote secretly for what you've been arguing for. A lot of Tory people have been saying they agree with Jeremy Corbyn on certain stuff. We hate him, but we agree with him on certain stuff, and we have that debate. We must have that debate. Because without that debate, people who vote with Brexit, we're going to say they're racist. That ain't necessarily so. That's not the truth. Take it away, John.
Thank you. Well, I've got to follow on Justin Bieber. That's going to be difficult. Is this a new Justin, by the way? This is a new sort of harder-edged... All of my teenage fans have grown up, so I have to... Okay. Not the really cool slowed down version. Okay. Oh, okay. All right. That's better. All right. That might be all right. Anyway, just so as a little reference you and I made off air earlier on, this is a reference that only hardened hip hop fans will get. We've done the dark side. Now we're going to do the light side. So this is my reference to death certificate. So good examples of working class organizations and people, because this is all about people who did not forget who they are. Well, here's a couple of great ones. Look at the Hillsborough Justice campaign and the wonderful victory they got after 27 long, hard years of fighting tabloid filth, of fighting lies that were told about them, smears against their family and their whole city. And they haven't forgotten, because to this day you'd struggle to find a copy of The Sun in Liverpool. Also, we can look at a similar way the ongoing All Grieve Truth and Justice campaign, which are well worth supporting, and I'd hope to sort of drop a link into them later on so you can reach them at their pages. Recently, we've also seen a number of young people in precarious jobs decide to unionise to defend themselves and improve their paying conditions. This includes Deliveroo, Uber, which is both younger and older people, and even strikes at McDonald's. Who ever thought we'd see that? Now, the strikes at McDonald's fascinate me. Earlier on, that we were talking about things that don't get a lot of attention. The original strikes at McDonald's in this country that happened last year were only two stores, but it got a lot of press attention, and consequently a lot more McDonald's workers, I believe, have now signed up with the Bakers Union, who were running that strike. So it's obviously had a very good effect. I mentioned the UCL tutors strike, which is getting great support from their students, and even the bigger unions, those established unions, have won some very good agreements in recent years. The CWU are recently looking at a negotiated agreement. Unite forced Sports Direct to pay out £1 million to warehouse staff who were not paid the minimum wage. In County Durham, there was a teaching assistants strike in both 2016 and 2017, and they got an agreement. And in Virginia, over the water in the good old USA, they've just won a really big strike, and and got what they were after. Now, the Virginia School Star, I'm going to do an entire show about that in the future, so I won't say any more about that now. But that's a really interesting story that, again, correct me if I'm wrong, I've not seen a jot of it in the British media, or at least the mainstream media. I'm sure it's in, you know, the magazines at the back of Houseman's and those sort of places, but I've not seen anything else about it. I also want to talk about something else I'm going to do a whole show on at some point, which is a union called United Voices of the World, who are London-based and a predominantly immigrant membership union, many of whose members don't actually speak full English. They are striking to improve their paying conditions in sectors like cleaning. They're very strongly representing cleaning. They just won a long-term strike at the London School of Economics for correct pay and wages, and they're about to go like at the offices of the Daily Mail. Yes, you heard me correctly. The Daily Mail, that massive immigrant-hating, don't come here if you can't speak English newspaper, employs cleaners at less than the minimum wage who predominantly don't speak English and will come from abroad. Read that story one night, pissed myself laughing very loudly. It was a good one. Culturally, let's talk about culture a little bit. Well, we've seen the rising stock of grime music, although unfortunately we've also seen a lot of attacks against it because of its predominance in the inner city and involvement of black people. The British poetry scene is in very good health too, although that also suffered a rather nasty class-based attack quite recently. But don't worry, I think it's going to weather it. It's going to grow and grow and grow. They will carry along, and many others, they are helping to improve the working class cultural position. I think we should give them credit. By the way, not all the in that particular attack, not all of the poets who were attacked were actually working class. They were very openly middle class people, which shows just how a relentlessly silly attack it was. With people like this around, the working class will always be about more than hating immigrants and living in a washed up fantasy of privilege. Now, I mentioned the organisation Class earlier, and they have a document called Minority Report. I'd like to just give you a couple of good quotes from it. They summed up some very nice ideas for going forward. Quote, "The key to improving the economic condition of the white working class is for government to take action to help all deprived communities, the left behind and the white working class and ethnic minority working class. And even though they voted differently on Brexit, these communities have close shared interests and would benefit from policies aimed at all low-income groups." End of quote. There's also another one which says, quote, "The Runnymede and Class are calling for the Home Secretary, Amber Rudd, to bring in the socio-economic duty, which is included in the 2010 Equality Act, but which ministers have refused to implement. This duty would force all 34,000 public authorities to tackle poverty and help low-income families." End of quote. Right, I don't know about you, but that's the first I'd heard of that when I was reading up on this issue. So socio-economic duty, which is in the 2010 Equality Act, clearly an act I need to read more of, but I'm very taken by the fact that that's, again, it's a good example, as I referred to with the EU, of legislation that's not carried out nationally. So who is your real enemy here, the large international body or the national one? Anyway, let's conclude the main body of this. Just to say this, young people are more politically tuned in than I've ever witnessed for most of my life, and I think we oldies need to take some direction from them, not least in their determination to go forward and build better. The working class needs to have a greater place in culture, and we must address this in tandem with our pricing out of education and other things like that that must change. We need to stop wanting to be middle-class consumers, because this action over the last 30 years is the chief reason I blame for the loss of working-class solidarity, identity and representation. In my opinion, it did more damage than deindustrialisation. Also, meritocracy is bullshit. We all know that, so let's not spend too much time on that issue. We have to make sure we better understand technology and how it will change our lives. Plus, we need to build and organise to end the precarious world of work as it is at the moment. We need to stop austerity and reverse much of the damage that it has done. We need better wages, we need better conditions, and we need more long-term prospects. And we just need to do more. We need to make more culture. You need to unite with your co-workers, your co-precariat, your co-unemployed, and your fellow students, and we need to fight back. We need to build and make a better world that you are directly involved in, that you have power in. Stop hating the foreigner down the street because you've got more in common with him or her than you do your middle manager cousin. Social mobility means nothing if you do not challenge power relations. Making it in a world of weak culture and no sustainability is going to go absolutely nowhere. So follow the youth. for their lives are the ones that are under the most strain at the moment and facing severe damage to their present and future. But many of them are not taking it lying down, so let's learn from them and give help where we can and learn where we can. Forget the hate squad and leave them behind. Be the internationalist working class that controls our own lives, not rebels in victimhood. Solutions are always in the future, not in the past. So that's that. I've got some recommendations to make, but we can come back to them in a minute. What do you think?
Thank you, John. You heard John. He wasn't laughing at what he was saying. He can hear me offline. Because what he's saying is quite radical, and I'm not going to hear that on the TV. I'm certainly not going to hear that on the radio. And look, what John's saying is not necessarily, oh, if you vote Tory or if you vote Liberal Democrats or UKIP or whatever. I think he's explaining a point of view of the youth, and our youth need hope. We need hope. Not we, because I'm old. Our children need hope. We need hope. We need to stop bombing people. We need to have the ability to spend when we want. Have that money to spend when we want. Have homes. Stop saying, well, what's it going to cost? I see this stuff about people. It's going to cost us. Well, it's cost us anyway for years. And it just puts a different point of view. We're going to close off the show after this short music break.
John Bouts, all the rage, all the on Tracks FM. Tracks FM.
And Susudio. I could have annoyed John and played something by Bob Geldof or Bono, but I won't.
Phil Collins was annoying enough. That's enough.
You're listening to John Bowers, All the Rage here on www.tracksfm.org. Just after John is myself. But John, we're going to close things off now. Go for it, John. Take it away.
Thanks, mate. Well, firstly, Phil Collins, a living epitome of the destruction of British culture in the 1980s. So thank you. Very well played. Okay, so in closing, I want to say a couple of things, but I just want to make a couple of recommendations. So I spoke about Class, the Centre for Labour and Social Studies. There's a lot of really, really good stuff on there. And they had a podcast. They actually had a Class on Class podcast, which is well worth listening to. It's only 3 episodes, but I recommend it. Their report from last March, Minority Report, Race and Class in Post-Brexit Britain, is well worth a read. And I would also that was done in conjunction with the Runnymede Trust, and I would also recommend an article by Jeremy Gilbert from the Open Democracy website, which was published in 2016, Why Did Working Class Culture Disintegrate in the 1980s? He covers a few things I haven't had time to cover here, and he's a much sharper and more academically clever man than I am. There's a lot of things we could say. Firstly, I agree with much of what you said there about what my intention is here. I believe these things need to be said. I'm not particularly interested in people, as we said on the issue about opinions, who offend for the sake of offending. If I offend anyone, yes, I have a bit of an attitude that that's their problem, but that's not really the point. The point is, I believe what I'm saying. I believe that what I'm saying is important, and that's why it needs to be said. And because, as you point out yourself, it isn't said in the mainstream. Now, let me leave you with a very quick, very good example. 1999, the Battle for Seattle, where, among other things, two groups came together. People who had previously been dismissed as tree-hugging hippies, and they had in turn dismissed loggers as hard hats or rednecks. These people had a realization that the WTO and the World Bank was doing neither of them any good, and they came together and united and fought back against it. It was a long, hard slog. How good of victories they achieved is always going to be open for debate. They didn't bring equality, you know, the day after they did this. They didn't bring a better position, but they carried on fighting, and they got a very, very good position for themselves, a better position for themselves in society. And that's what I think we all need to do. Let's get some unity going on here. Let's forget about any of the troubles and hatred of the past. And we need to get ourselves together, because the working class in Great Britain is not a white versus black thing. It never has been. It's a united thing. And when we're united, we are very, very strong. So take that with you this evening, my good people.
All the Rage with John Bowd on www.traxfm.org.